All right, welcome to the March 2024 Mayday Monday podcast. Just want to apologize again for not having a podcast in February. February was tough. Thought we had made some connections, and unfortunately, it didn't pan out. So hopefully, you guys were able to kind of dig into last month's message and look at that. Mark, can you pull the slides up real quick? This was last month's, remember we touched on, commercial building fires. And, one of the themes that I'm carrying now is that these are a different kind of fire, right? These are different than our typical fires. One out of every four fires is a commercial building fire, right? And really not even commercial building. It's a non-residential building. So it could be even less than, right? Less times we go to a true commercial building. So those are different kinds of fires than the last fire you went to. So it may require different tactics. So think about that. Resist the urge to use residential tactics in these buildings. Last month was in honor of the two firefighters from Porterville who died in a commercial building. Please go back, look at their reports. There's a really good report out of California. And there's also the NIOSH report. Also, don't forget, February is Heart Health Month. And hopefully you guys took a time to get out and get that ticker checked and do some maintenance on your heart, because if we don't have that, right, it's going to be tough. So let me close this back. And also, before we get too far into this thing, I want to take a moment and mention the line of duty deaths, the firefighters who have died in the line of duty since the last time we were together. We had a firefighter, Rory Boré. I'm not sure how you say his name. He's from the Cumberland Head Volunteer Fire Department out of New York. He suffered a heart attack while on the scene of a car accident. It actually happened on 12/27 of last year, but he passed on January 3rd of this year. Ryan Pleasance was an engineer from the Walla Walla, Washington Fire Department. He was found deceased in his bed from an apparent heart attack. Robert Brown Sr. of Glendale Fire Department from South Carolina was pulling hose on the scene of a brush fire when he suffered a medical emergency. Daniel DeWolf was working to set up water supply on a fire when he collapsed. He's from the Fairville Volunteer Fire Department in New York. The cause of death is unknown at this time. Bobby Lewis Jr., he responded to a call the night before he suffered a heart attack. He's from the Lenore Fire Department in Tennessee. Marquez Hudson from Plainfield, New Jersey. Marquez was rescued by other firefighters after he became trapped during the firefight. Unfortunately, he did not survive his injuries. Four other firefighters were also injured at that fire. Tony Baumgartner is from the Lawrence Mill Fire Department, Volunteer Fire Department. He's a captain with them. He was returning from a fire when he was involved in an apparatus crash. Chris Nelson, I don't think you guys can see that on the slide, but Chris Nelson is a firefighter paramedic with the Selma Fire Department. He was injured during training in 2014. He suffered injuries and could not survive. He passed from those injuries this past February. Trevor Brown, again, a firefighter close to here, close to Mayday Monday headquarters in Loudoun County, Virginia. He's from the Sterling Volunteer Fire Department. He was fatally injured while operating on the scene of a gas leak. And the house that the gas leak, you think it was gas, the gas tank was feeding the house. Apparently the gas, found an ignition source and blew up and destroyed the house, killing Trevor and injuring several more firefighters. I think there is still a firefighter in the burn center with injuries from that fire. Adam Finseth, a firefighter paramedic, was shot and killed while on the scene of a domestic incident. Two police officers from the Burnsville Police Department were also killed. A third police officer was shot, but he received non-life-threatening injuries. Just a horrible incident there. Tommy Lee, assistant chief with the Kill Devil Hills Fire Department, had finished doing physical fitness training, and he was found unresponsive later that day. Lewis Dunstan, a safety officer with the Youngsville North Carolina Fire Department suffered an apparent heart attack the day after participating in training and department training. And Chief Zeb Smith of the Fritch Volunteer Fire Department was the first person on the scene of a house fire. He went inside to go check to see if any occupants were inside, but he didn't come back out. Firefighters were sent in. They rescued him, but unfortunately, he didn't survive. The cause of death this time has not been determined. There have been 14 firefighter fatalities in 2024. Please keep all of these firefighters and their families and their department and all the members that know them and going through this time, keep them in your thoughts and your prayers if you offer prayers. I think it's important that we continue to mention these names because I'm sure there was a lot of you out there that didn't know that all these firefighters have been killed in 2024 and maybe a little bit about what happened to them. And you can go back and look them up and find out how it was connected and if there's something that you can learn from their incident, because that's what Mayday Mondays is about. So tonight we're going to get in and talk about a fire from Cincinnati, Ohio. And with me is a assistant chief. You're the operations chief, Mark?
Correct. Yep.
The operations chief from the Cincinnati Fire Department. And he is joining me to talk about Daryl Gordon and the firefighter involved and the incident and the Cincinnati Fire Department. Mark, will you do us a favor to take a couple seconds here? Or if you have a really long resume, take all the time.
No, not that long. But first of all, I really appreciate you having me on tonight. We've been in contact a couple times, but it's really humbling to be able to come on and talk about Daryl. He's a great man. And, line of duty deaths are tough. It's been a while since we've gone over this. Rewriting Daryl's report, the NIOSH reports, it's a great exercise for me to get back into it. He's not forgotten, believe me. But anyway, my resume. So I work for the city of Cincinnati. Again, I'm the operations chief there. Been with the city of Cincinnati since 1998. Prior to that, I was city of Xenia, which is up near Dayton, Ohio, smaller department. But came into the fire service on accident, really took a job, took a test on a whim. Yeah, I had no family in the fire service. My brothers were a cop. My other brother's a missionary, so I mean, public servants, but no fire background. So got into the fire service, got bit by a bug, and it's been a great career for me. Lucky enough to have parallel careers. I retired from the military back in 2012, did 22 years between the Navy, actually, and the Army, retired as a commissioned officer. So two good careers I've been really proud of and it served me well. So that's kind of me in the nutshell. Most of my time is spent in suppression. Once I went into the 40-hour world, I worked, fire prevention, some emergency management type stuff, logistical, stuff. So I kept swimming upstream and got back into operations. Yeah. And that's where I'm happy. That's what I like.
Yeah, no, I get it. Cincinnati has been good to Mayday Mondays. We had last year, we talked to Joe Arnold. We talked about Oscar and the Oscar Armstrong incident. And Cincinnati's been real solid for us. We got a couple of contacts there, right? And I sicked them on you. And Craig is it was a good one to go to. And Scotty Shaw. Right. Scotty Shaw is like a family friend. He my aunt, I want to say they were really close friends with Charlie, with Scotty's dad and Scott's mom.
Okay.
And I got to drive Scott's dad's tiller truck back in Campbellsville. And I was probably, 10 years old or something. And Scott was, was one or something. But no, it's good connections, and guys helped me out. And I tell them I'll appreciate them helping me get in contact with you.
Sure.
So let's have, if you would, Mark, bring the slides back up. All right, here's our subject tonight, Daryl Gordon. Daryl Gordon was, at the time of his death, he was 54 years old. He had been appointed to the Cincinnati Fire Department back in 1985. It seems like he was very active in the fire department, and even became an apparatus operator for a heavy rescue unit and was on the bomb squad, right? So becoming the senior bomb technician.
Yeah. So Daryl, you know, he was the epitome of the senior man. When you talk about this, we call firefighters roughnecks, right? In Cincinnati, they're roughnecks. But Daryl was a senior roughneck, backseater, downtown 5th and Central Fire Headquarters. That's fire headquarters on the second floor, and the fire department, the apparatus on the first, obviously. But he was around for a long time, and that's where our bomb unit is headquartered, right downtown. Interesting, this picture, by the way, down lower right corner with the shoes, that was taken just an instant, somebody walking through the bay that morning. The companies were out. Those are Daryl's shoes. He left them there when he got on that apparatus for the last time. But Daryl was a great guy. I didn't run around with Daryl much, but he was a big guy, and he had a big hearty laugh and a big presence, right? You know, in the kitchen table, everybody knew Daryl was there. But I relied on Daryl a lot as a junior officer. I would call him and get his take on, you know, if I had to write, for instance, we call them props ratings or basically officer reviews, officer evaluation reports, those kind of things. And I would call Daryl like, hey, man, I've got this assigned to me, but I haven't had a chance to work with this guy. What can you tell me? And he'd give it to you straight, right? And helped me a lot. So it was a mentorship from a senior roughneck to a junior officer. And, that's just the kind of guy he was.
Yeah, I can see from the pictures with his smile and he could probably light up the room and then provide something for everybody, right? Young, old, senior guys, junior guys.
Yeah. When Daryl spoke, people listened. He was opinionated, and he was a good fireman, right? That's, I think, the best compliment we give each other is Daryl was good. Daryl was a good fireman. And, he became a driver late in his career. We call him FAOs or fire apparatus operators, but he was extending his career a little bit. The downtown companies are busy. They make a lot of runs, and he's going to stretch that career out a little bit as a driver. So, when Daryl was on the heavy rescue, he was actually what we call a traveling driver, assigned to the district, and they had an opening that tour. So that's what found Daryl on heavy rescue that tour.
Oh, gotcha. I gotcha. So other things, yep, too, he married his college sweetheart. He went to Ball State University, where he played football there. And he met his wife, Angela. Together, they had two daughters, Angelique and Chelsea. And it sounds like from everything that gathered doing my research, was his love for family, his love for racing, tinkering with cars. And you could find him, if you didn't find him at a firehouse or in his backyard, you might find him in his garage working on his cars and getting ready.
Yeah, typical driver, very mechanically inclined, like to work on his engines, on his mower, on his race cars. I didn't have the opportunity to meet his family. I've met them a couple times in passing as they come to the firehouse or come for a memorial service or something like that. But I don't know his family well. But I know everybody speaks very highly of him. We'll say that.
Yeah, and it's tough. They all seem to be really good guys that we review on the Mayday Mondays, and there's always a void, right, that they leave. But invariably, as solid guys do, like step up and help with that. Obviously, it's more than just a plaque on the wall, the memory of Daryl. That kind of lives on in all you guys that are carrying on the deed there.
Yeah, you'd mentioned Joe. Joe Arnold does a fantastic job for us. He came back. Joe's retired now, but came back as an instructor and still does a fantastic job of carrying that legacy on and really getting in the weeds, explaining it to the new kids when they come on the department, the legacy that Daryl left behind.
Well, let's talk about Cincinnati. Cincinnati, what are you guys up to, like 300,000 people now?
Yeah, a little over. We've had a population increase. It's depending on which source you check. We're about 310,000, right at 77, 78 square miles. So it's pretty decent sized city, 52 neighborhoods. We have 26 firehouses. We call them firehouses here, one of which actually has two engines in it now. So we have 27 engines running out of 26 houses.
Is that like an ISO rating thing there to get that?
No, it's actually, so we had changed our dispatch system to an all AVL system a couple of years ago, and as predicted, when we did that, it it really crushed part of the West Side. Like that company went up to pretty regularly 25, 30 runs a day, and just became kind of untenable for them to make any runs. So our council was gracious enough. They gave us an extra engine. We staffed that with overtime actually every day.
Oh, wow.
So we're working on getting more full-time employees, but right now that engine's been in service since October of 22. It's engine one, right? So that's, we took back engine one. It had been off the books for years, but took that name back and added it over in our neighborhood of Westwood.
Yeah. That's on the West Side, you said?
Yeah, it's on the West Side, north, kind of west, northwest side of Cincinnati, Westwood. Mm-hmm.
So you say with that additional engine, how many engine companies does Cincinnati have?
That gives us 27 operating right now.
Yep. And
27. We have four-person staffing, all career, all paid. We keep a paramedic on every heavy apparatus, including trucks, and heavy rescues have paramedics. So everything that rolls in Cincinnati has a paramedic on it.
Wow.
But we're really fortunate with our staffing. We're having a little trouble right now keeping enough paramedics to keep on our transport units. We have 12 transport units. They're all ALS right now also. So the medics take a pretty good beating on that, depending on which one they're on. But it's providing good service for the citizens here.
So you say only 12 transport units?
Right.
Are you supplemented by like a private ambulance too? Or it just seems like a.
No, that's what we have. They're spread out geographically across the city. We do rely on mutual aid occasionally. Our mutual aid runs are going up. It's not always us providing it to the outside. We have some of our neighboring departments are providing. We had a couple today, as a matter of fact, mutual aid runs. They come into the city and transport for us.
So you said 26 engines?
27 engines in 26 houses. We make about 85,000 runs a year, 85, 87, something like that. And it's, like everybody else, our runs are going up, calls for service going up. So, 87,000, about 90, anywhere from, again, what you look at, 85 to 90% EMS. Yeah. Fires are down, but we still have them. We had a fire on Monday, actually, a very similar building to the Dahlgren building we're going to get into here. Second floor of a high rise building. But went without a hitch. Guys put it out quickly and really contained it well. So pretty busy department. Yeah.
What's how many staff do you have? Any members do you have in the department?
Yeah. So we're authorized 841. We have about 850 right now. We're a little bit over just from the last class. Very young department. Our department has shifted, and I couldn't tell you the average age off the top of my head, but it has gotten a lot younger in the last 5-6 years. So we went from being an old department and almost overnight flipped over to a very young department. We have another 49 civilian staff that augments us. So about 900 workers in the department, if you will. Our female, I'm looking at the one picture, you have some females. We're at about 6.3% female, so a little bit higher than national average. And we recruit hard. So we've got a test. We're getting ready to put another class in right now, soon to be in a couple of months.
Yeah, it's an endless battle, isn't it, to try and keep those numbers, keep everybody filled. And it's
Like everybody else, our applicant pool has gone way down since when you and I joined the fire department, where there were thousands of applicants. Now there's under 1,000. Yeah. We got a lot of retirements coming up, and our class sizes have increased to 50, 55, with future classes getting even bigger than that. So, there's a hiring push for sure.
Yeah, and everybody probably around you is hiring, so you're all trying to get the same pool, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough battle right now, but good. So it sounds like Cincinnati's doing good with the fire service there.
Yeah, we've got a new chief, took a new chief on board. I want to say it was in September of last year. So he's been there going on 6 months. Chief McKinley comes from Dallas, Texas. Yep. So growing the department. Everybody's working towards getting this department bigger and better every day.
Good stuff. Right, let's take it back to March 26th of 2015. You guys were, what time was the call? Like 5:30?
Yeah, it was early in the morning. I don't recall the time. Very early in the morning, came in as food on the stove. This is a complex. There's actually four buildings in this complex. 6020 is the building, the biggest building of that complex, and set furthest to the rear of the parking lot. I don't know if you have any other pictures of an overview, but this is a very restrictive entrance into this complex, and that creates some issues with us. There are no hydrants back in here. The hydrants are outside. So apparatus positioning was difficult in this building. Also, you know, if you look at that building, it's the access to it from the front for ladder trucks is about all you got. You know, rises in the rear. Yep, it's difficult. So that's a tough building.
You can see in the picture, you know, the bottom right picture, and the yep. top right, you can see the rear there to the left and to the right. So there's no road behind it, so you're definitely not getting anything back there. But I want you guys all to go look at the Cincinnati report that was linked in the Mayday Monday this month. If you go look at the report, they've got good diagrams. I've included some of the interior diagrams in this, but to get an idea, like he's talking about, of the funnel, right? The funnel and the choke point, getting back to that building. And then when you go on and you'll see what, some of the difficulties they had, and it makes sense then what they were dealing with.
Yeah, and this, we make a lot of runs to this building. We still make a lot of runs in this complex. It's eerie to hear this number come in. Every time you hear it come across, it raises the hair on the back of your neck. You know, I don't think I'll ever get over that. But they made a lot of runs here. Not a lot of fires, but a lot of runs, a lot of false calls. And that was, one of the contributing factors that we found with the internal study we did.
So,
but
chock full of people, right? I mean, it was. There's those things.
I think 38 apartments in this building. Floors 2 through 5 had a common layout. I think they had eight apartments on each one of those floors. The first floor had the mechanical room, some laundry facilities, that kind of thing. I think they had six apartments on the first floor there. You probably got it there.
That's the top left floor there.
Yeah. Maintenance room, furnace room, et cetera. Elevator room. The elevator in this photo. This is a hydraulic elevator with a pit in the lower end.
Yeah, right in the middle of the building, right? The elevator.
Yeah, centrally located elevator with stairwells on either end. Yeah.
So fire was reported on the second floor?
Second floor, apartment 27. And this is a pretty tight building, right? So on arrival, nothing showing. Right. You hear that? I think that's a key takeaway, and we're all guilty of that to some extent. Engine 49's on scene, nothing showing. Yeah. Right, so the adrenaline's not there yet. You've got an engine, a truck, and a district chief on the way, but engine 49 was there first. And as they pulled up, they have an occupant come out and grab them, say, "Hey, my apartment's on fire." You know, so that was the start of the incident, really.
So looking at that, right? So then he grabbed like a firefighter, right? And the firefighter followed him up to the apartment.
Yeah. So engine 49 that day had a person right, what we call riding above grade. They had a firefighter that was not an officer, he was a firefighter riding in the right front seat. So he's in charge that day. Actually, three companies in that district had firefighters riding above grade. It was another contributing factor that we found. But the other firefighter in the back seat, as they jumped off, went with the civilian. So they separated their crew immediately. And this firefighter followed this civilian into the building, actually, and to try to determine where the location of the fire was. But he did that without a hose line, right? Yeah. So he's doing a recon, if you will, as a firefighter, while the officer is getting, the person acting as an officer is getting off.
There was three men,
drivers,
three people on the rig that day.
Four. Okay. Yep. Always four. Mm-hmm. Yep. Four. One was at the hydrant.
Oh, okay.
So it's still in our procedures that we lay a tail or lay a 5-inch supply for every responding apparatus, except for safety. You know, the first two engines for sure will lay their own tail. So that left a firefighter at the hydrant, while the engineer, the driver, the FAO, was connecting into his pump. So split the crew almost immediately and really made him somewhat ineffective right then. Yeah. Also, that other firefighter was a probationary firefighter, right? Brand new. I don't know, had had a fire before this one. This might have been her first fire.
The one who went with the occupant?
No. This is the one.
It's a hydrant. Yep. I got you. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
All right. So she's at the hydrant. And then the other one, the guy got off, went with the occupant. He gets up there, recognizes there's a fire. And is he radio outside or did?
He's trying to radio out the, and I don't know, to be honest, if he returned with a face to face or if he tried to radio. I know, you know, my recollection, there were so many communication issues. And one of the contributing things here also was this fire was dispatched on a different fire ground. Yeah, you know, we don't do this procedure anymore. It's very confusing. But at the time, for whatever reason, we dispatched on Delta 8, which is Channel 8 of the talk group Delta. If it's a working fire, you switch over to Delta 2, right? So they had a large majority of the people on that fire ground were not on the right talk group. So I believe he was on the wrong talk group to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see the challenge in that. So, all right.
And that made sense for somebody at some point, and I don't remember why we changed that almost immediately.
So he makes it up to the second floor and turns around and comes back.
Makes it to the second floor and coming back. Hey, there's a working fire in this building.
So the officer's stretching the line, or the acting officer stretching the line up there.
Getting to stretch the line. Yep.
And then.
And they had pre-planned this building. This is it's a little bit of a hazard. You know, obviously we like to pre-plan buildings, get out and look at them, see what they contain. But in their pre-plan that they had done relatively soon before this fire, they had chosen a set of steps to go to work in, and not situation dependent. They were just going to take these steps, right? Whatever stairwell this was, that's going to be their attack stairwell. And it actually ended up being a long way. You know, that was the furthest steps from the fire and made them have to actually fight down the hallway of fire to get to that apartment. But they could have came in the other set of steps and they'd have been right there. You know, if they'd have come in off the B side of the building and up the set of steps, they'd have been right there. As it was, they came in the Delta side, came up those steps, and we'll talk about this in a minute, but they came up short, right? That engine company came up short.
All right, so they get up, like you said, it started on the stove. That's a picture of the stove there, the fire origin. And they were met with a pretty good fire, huh?
Yeah, good fire, right? So they, in laying their hose line, and they had entanglement issues right off the bat. So getting the first line in service went very poorly. Their hose got, this particular building has a set of open tread stairs that don't meet the wall. As they come up the steps, that hose line dropped down between the concrete wall and the side of the steel steps right there and became wedged in that, and it ate up their hose, right? They lost a lot of length off that hose line and they could not advance it. Once they charged it, it was locked in. They're not removing it. It's stuck. And that female firefighter, she's actually no longer with the department. She moved on. She was one who actually went back out and tried to release that hose line and couldn't get it released. While the officer and now the other firefighter were in there, and they're getting burned, right? They pushed as far as they could push, but they couldn't, you know, they couldn't advance any further on that fire. They're coming down the hallway into the fire and without enough hose line and without enough pressure. And it was not a good situation for them, right?
So was help close behind, or are they delayed in that complex?
No, so it's a pretty standard response at the time. The second engine coming from that next neighborhood over, engine 31, also came up short, right? They also had issues with their hose line getting tangled. So hose deployment was a real problem for these folks, these first two arriving engine companies. Trucks were coming on scene. District chief was on scene. He added an additional engine and truck almost immediately, which that chief's no longer with the department, but that was a pretty common practice for him. We would hear that pretty often. And it's, you know, it's just kind of the way we go to work. If you, they would piecemeal as opposed to knocking a second alarm off. They piecemeal the next alarm in a little bit, but it does create some confusion for our accountability. But yeah, so hose line and hose line deployment and water on that fire was really delayed. I think 22 minutes to get the initial water on it. And that's coming from a third engine now. It was actually our safety engine. I don't know how far you want to get into our tactics, but at the time we had a safety engine would show up. And they actually used the hose line off of that engine and came up as the closer set of stairs. And they actually put the fire out with an 1¾-inch hose at that point. Right. But it burned, you know, in apartment 27, that compartmentalized 1¾-inch, knocked the fire down. Got our rescue officer at the time, rescue 9, one of our two heavy rescues. He had picked up a hose line from engine 49, although it was short, still cooled down the hallway. One of the things that in this, you know, other cities, I'm sure have heard this, but from the time we were new kids on a department, right? They say, don't spray into smoke, you know, spray, only spray into fire. Don't spray into smoke. Well, this was a super heated environment and, it needed some water application, right? You had to spray some water in there to get that, some of that heat absorbed. But he actually took a punishment, rescue officer, opened that line up and got that cooled down a little bit. And was able to go down, tried to get that door closed to compartmentalize that fire, but the about the upper third of that door was burned off. So it helped a little bit, but it's still, you know, that gives you an idea of the intensity of that fire. Of course, from the pictures, you can tell it was flashed over, everything in it. About the same time, we had a captain that was riding with District 4, who was the first arriving chief. This captain just happened to be riding with him to learn incident command. You know, he's going to be promoted relatively soon. He's learning about this. And he took out the patio sliding doors, as in broke them out with that door open.
Fire apartment.
Yep. From the rear. That grading kind of comes into play here. He was able to reach that. He ordered a Rosneck to take those doors. He didn't physically do it himself. He had one of the other firefighters do it. But you know, he made that decision to try to ventilate that fire and took those doors out. And so, you know, we could have a discussion about the intensity of that fire, but just know that happened, right? So that happened while the guys are trying to make the push down that hallway to get to it. Right? Probably something we wouldn't do today, but you know, again, old firefighter, been around for a long time,
right?
And made that
decision. Those windows, it'll be cooler,
Right. Yep.
So, and the firefight. From these guys was also coming up that Delta stairwell?
Yeah, so the first two arriving engine companies trying to get up that Delta stairwell. Both of them had deployment issues. Both of them had tanglement issues. Those open tread stairs, the door didn't get chocked until late. This company didn't have, whatever reason, those firefighters weren't carrying door chocks or any commercially made available, you know, chocks of any kind. Yeah, the typical looking for a rug to throw in front of the door or something to keep it open, but that door kept closing on them. So the first two engines, they had a lot of trouble. The third engine came up actually the opposite steps off the B side and was able to put that fire out. But, you know, the point of this, the delay in getting water on this fire, you know, again, this is a second floor fire in a multi-story high-rise multi-dwelling, or mid-rise, you know, but it's charging this building with smoke, right? So that's the problem. It's charging this building.
Not full of people.
Yeah, 5:30 in the morning, fully occupied. People are sheltering in place. They're jumping actually out of windows now. There was a lot going on here. Yeah, and on top of it, real access issues. Those 2 5-inch supply lines from the first two engines had been charged. They were effectively barricaded that driveway, right? So a lot of apparatus on this fire, not many apparatus in the complex because you got 2 5-inch supply lines that are now crisscrossed across that driveway. And honestly, I don't think you could barricade it any better if you put, you know, Jersey barriers on it, right? So that's one way in, one way out of that place. And the positioning of that 5-inch is a really critical thing when you're getting ready to charge it, you know, as is timing and letting trucks in and, you know, things like that. So there was plenty of issues there going on right off the bat.
So I know that Daryl was on a second alarm unit, right?
Yep. So Daryl, when the second alarm was struck, he was again on the heavy rescue downtown. So I'm sure the night watchman, you know, we have night watchmen here. They either were probably awake. I know some of the guys were probably awake that morning already. You know, it's time to get up and dropping coffee and that kind of thing. But yeah, so Daryl came in on second alarm, driving the heavy rescue. So they arrived. Now I have to look at the timeline again. I can't recall off the top of my head, but the fire may have been out when they got there. I think it probably was right around the same time.
But lots of smoke still.
Yep, building still charged with smoke. And
still,
rescue company got the rescue 14 got on, and the incident commander had them to, they wanted them to clear the stairs and conduct a search on the upper floor, work their way down.
They're still on the primary search, right?
They're still on primary search. A lot of these apartments are locked, but again, we know they're occupied. And that crew, pretty typically here in Cincinnati, we'll split crews on the heavy rescues, just like we do the trucks. You know, I have an interior, exterior crew. But that crew was also led by a firefighter in charge riding above grade that day. It was not an officer, but he'd been around for a minute, you know, so wasn't his first time in charge, but he was in charge that day, and their crew split. And actually Daryl, coming off the apparatus as the driver, I'm sure wasn't fully dressed, probably had bunker pants on and that's it. Again, it's pretty chilly out. So he's probably bunker pants and a sweatshirt or something, and shows up. So he's got to get dressed while the other guys on that company were dressed, masked up, and ready to move. And they're younger, and these are aggressive guys. And off they took off for this building, going to work. So Daryl had to catch up right from the beginning. He had to catch up.
So with the search again, I know reading that there was lots of people were rescued from this building. Like you had like 20 some. Civilians.
Yeah, I think there was 21, 22 civilians actually rescued, and not just walked down the stairs rescued. These are people being pulled out of this building. Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot going on while they're trying to get water on the fire, and then Daryl gets there and his crew is searching. Now they had identified the elevator ahead of time, right?
Yeah, actually several people had identified it. And the guy riding above grade on heavy rescue had a marker in his pocket. We'll mark our doors with chalk or with, a Sharpie or whatever. And they wrote on that door, do not enter, open shaft. Right. So, I don't know the smoke conditions on the fifth floor. I know it was still cold smoke, pretty heavy. I think, the report lists a foot, 1 to 2 feet visibility. So it's pretty thick up on the top floor of this. But yeah, the first guy, opened that door and recognized that, hey, this doesn't seem right. Why is this door opening outward as opposed to opening inward? And went to sound the floor and realized this is an elevator shaft, right? This building had been inspected. Yeah, has an old style elevator, again, hydraulic elevator, and these doors have interlocks on it. This particular interlock had failed. There's, I think, another 12 or 13 of these style elevator, buildings in the city. Yeah. But this one, the interlock mechanism towards the top of the door there had failed.
Oh, sure. If it's worn out, right?
It's an old building. It's well known. Yeah. When the homicide unit from the police department came and interviewed people there, it was well known throughout the building that was an ongoing issue and a problem. And it didn't take a lot of effort to open that door. Yes. Especially if you're charged up, you got adrenaline going. It's not going to take a grown man much effort to pull it open. Right. So the first two guys actually saw that it was a shaft. They identified it. They wrote on it and actually called out to command and said, hey, we got a problem here. We got an open shaft, behind this door. So they acknowledged it. There was no emergency traffic on it. So everybody on the fire ground didn't know that. Yeah. But they had relayed it to command. And I don't believe it ever went any further than that.
So I get it.
So
he's kind of lagging. But he's also, right, he's remote from the fire, operating in smoky conditions, but probably felt comfortable enough to be up there. And the rest of his crew was probably on the fourth floor or third floor, right?
Yeah, and his crew, had already come down this floor and marked it. He's coming up behind them. And, to be honest, Daryl was 54 years old. He was a big man, a little heavier, big, strong. Probably didn't have, you know, the speed that some of these younger guys have. And he gets dressed and he's coming up that stairwell, makes it to the top of the step, and he's doing what rescue guys do, right? They search, and force entry and search. So that's, and then he came upon that door. And beyond that, you know, once he fell in the shaft, they didn't know he was gone, right? He was separated for a minute and they didn't know it was gone until you start hearing a pass device. There was no alarm. We have an MSA, we actually have an air monitoring system in the city here that we use with our MSA, SCBAs that has several alarms, whether it's low air alarm, high heat indicator, motion detector. You know, there's several things that will put this piece of equipment into an alarm mode, that our accountability and safety officers should know.
So you have, that PAC thing, that MSA thing. Is that the command post?
Yeah. It's a laptop and a command post in the back of the, it's in the back of the chief's vehicle. Okay. We could have a whole conversation about that. Also, I've not, as an incident commander myself for several years, and, you know, I've had a lot of fires. I haven't had a whole lot of luck with that system, and that's not to disparage the system. It's just, it's a nice to have, and oftentimes doesn't work. And, was a little bit, it's not as intuitive as you would think, a little bit difficult to get it up and running. And I think to be honest, I think there was a lot of chaos there, and I'm not sure it was ever got up and running. It's in a report, but I can't recall.
So that, that would maybe identify it or send a signal sooner.
It could have. Yeah. So had that been up and running, I won't say that it would change the outcome, but we would have done sooner that we had a member down.
So the guys had heard a pass alarm going off in the building?
They did. And, they knew Daryl, they went back to look for him, and, the acting officer actually heard a pass device. And when he opened that door, that's when he could, you know, he looked down the shaft and he could see Daryl's body on top of the elevator shaft. Now, again, Daryl's a big man, right? And he was wedged in between that car and the wall, right? Which is about 12 inches. So he's a big man, and the upper portion of his body was wedged in that, pretty severe musculoskeletal injuries, pretty heavy bleeding into his face piece. Not a good situation, but it immediately dumped the air out of that mask, and that's what made the pass device start going off.
Do you think, the elevator was on the second floor?
Yeah, between first and second floors.
Mm-hmm. So he went
Barrels on
from fifth. Five to one and a half?
Right, yep.
And
so probably 30 feet, you know, 30 some feet.
So then it became a rescue operation, huh?
It did. So again, we'll go back to the apparatus positioning, the heavy rescue. Their tools are not close to the scene now, right? So our trucks carry RAT equipment, but they also, you know, they don't have the same demolition equipment that you would find on a typical heavy rescue company. So they knew Daryl was on top of the car.
Viewers, RAT is Rapid Assistance Team, right? So that's kind of like, other places might be your RIT or your FAST, but just RAT is their rapid intervention.
Yeah. Yep. You can see the bottle. You can see a bottle wedged in a car right there. But the total time of rescue time, once they knew that he was there, they actually breached through the car wall. And were able to get Daryl down. We had guys on top of the car. They had tied him off with webbing to make sure he didn't fall any further down in between that area. And then brought him down into the car.
Okay.
Excuse me. Total rescue time was actually pretty quick. Yeah, 13 minutes. I'm sure, you know, it sounds quick. That's a lifetime when somebody's, critically injured. Yeah. So got him into the car, tried to get him into Stokes basket. But had a lot of difficulty in maneuvering that around. Again, still smoke conditions in this building at the time. And they end up, I think, ditching the Stokes basket and just rescue carried him out of the building to a waiting medic unit. So, it was, you know, so many lessons to be learned here. And if, you know, that outward swinging door, right? And if, and I know that's a focal point of the event here for you guys. Yeah, it certainly signified issues and problems with the first couple guys. And, you know, it's conjecture at this point. We don't know if Daryl lost his balance and fell down. At what point did he recognize, hey, there's no floor here? You know, were conditions lighter a little bit? Did he step in? You know, I don't think, nobody believes he stepped into it, right? He's probably hands and knees feeling. And, you know, did he lose his balance or what happened? At what point? What point do you recognize this is not normal, this outward swinging door? And that's one of the key things our training bureau really tries to drive home with the new firefighters and the recruits. Hey, there's old buildings in Cincinnati, right? These elevators still exist here. And if it's not this situation, it could be something else. But knowing that, you know, in a living quarters, the door is opening inward into that apartment versus outward as a mechanical room or a laundry area or an elevator shaft, you know, something should go off in your head that this is not right.
So let's talk about lessons learned. And I know, again, you guys put together a really comprehensive after action report, an internal report there. And guys, if you're listening, you want to find it, it's linked on the Fire Engineering Mayday Monday. It can also go on, I know City of Cincinnati has it on their website, so you can find it there. If you Google Cincinnati Gordon LODD, I'll take you to it. But you guys listed some 22 lessons learned or reinforced in this fire. We'll go over them real quick because there's a lot here, and we could have a whole show about a lot of these, right? But you mentioned
I'm sorry. I just want to say up front, you know, and we encourage people, hey, pull this report up. It's pretty damning, right? When you read that, it probably will make you angry, right? So it does us. It makes us mad. And we've all got those, and I don't want to say companies, these are good people here who weren't trained well or didn't train well, right? And they find themselves in a situation, and you know, you're not going to rise to a level of excellence during an emergency. You're going to fall to your level of training, right? That's the same thing we hear, we preach. And there's a lot of issues that went wrong here, and that chain of survival, chain of, you know, events can culminate in a line of duty death, and that's what it did here. But if I had to pick something, you know, complacency, you know, that's, I don't know how many times we have to learn as a fire service that lesson, that you're making that same run. It's been food on the stove for the last 99 times, or a false alarm. But these buildings, these old type 2, type 1 buildings, they're pretty tightly constructed, and I've made several highways fires down here too. You're not always going to see smoke, right? Nothing showing on arrival. Doesn't mean that there's not anything going on. Hose deployment here, we really hammer home hose deployment in our drill school, our fire academy now, to the point it's second nature. But again, perishable skills. I think our drill school now is better than it was by far, and thanks to the effort of a lot of people. They came before me, but these guys, they really hammer hose deployment because it really allowed that fire to get out of control much, much longer than it should have. There's a lot of stuff on it. Radio traffic was a big problem for us. Again, we fixed that in terms of how we go to work, you know, with a fire talk group.
I know,
staying on your
sign. One of the things I missed on that was that it also mentioned the dangerous conditions / emergency radio traffic, right? And that making sure that everybody understands that the difference between normal radio traffic and emergency radio traffic, and some things fit into an emergency category that we want everybody to know about, right? So make sure that those messages get out. And that,
yeah, and whatever your method is, you know, if that's announcing emergency, you have to say it, right? Hey, emergency traffic, or whatever, you know, whatever your SOP is for your department. Critically important to get that out.
So your safety engineer, you guys still have, do you still send that, or is that the working fire?
We do. That's the third engine on our typical box alarm. We have still alarm and box alarm concept. Still engines, you know, still alarms, you're getting a reduced response. Once a working fire is acknowledged, then they send the remainder, the balance. But the safety engine will come in and they will split, actually. So the safety engine comes in and they'll take over the engine officer and driver will take over accountability behind the from the incident commander's vehicle. The other two firefighters join the initial RAT truck, a rapid assistance team, to make a 6-member team and not a 4-member team.
Okay.
So they increase the size of the RAT. So they both come in relatively about the same time. You can distinguish them. They make little bottle covers, you know, that acknowledge them as RAT, and they'll set their tools forward and, you know, that kind of thing. And they'll soften the building for us, pulling bars off windows or forcing entry, that kind of, throwing ground ladders. There's a lot of work they should be doing. Yeah. So 6 people, we just found it is, that's still not enough if you have a mayday or if you have a problem, but it's enough to get you started. And we have RAT assist companies that we can always, that's just another company either on scene or that you've called for.
So is every truck company trained as a RAT?
Yes, they are now, right? Back in the day, we had 4 strategically located throughout the city, but now every truck company carries RAT equipment because you don't know where that fire's coming in. And it takes some tactical discipline on the officer and on that crew to remain RAT. And we had there's a steep learning curve there when they come in, and these guys want to go to work. And it's tough when you get a bunch of type A players and you say, you're the RAT truck. And that means you're standing on the sidelines for this one, but we need those guys, right? They have to be there ready to go to work and with their head in the game. They're just not working at the moment. Now, we can put them to work, which was done in this instance. We can put them to work, and I've done it myself, but you got to replace them, and you got to replace them quickly. And there's, you know, when it comes down to it, we're very aggressive here. Citizens' lives are going to take precedent here, and if I got to put if I'm going to assume some risk, I'm going to assume some risk on the fire department side and put those guys to work to pull that civilian out. We've got the equipment, the training to do that. There's different opinions of that, you know, on who goes first, but I'll put the RAT company to work on occasion, not as a matter of course, but you got to replace them if you do.
Are they the third ladder truck on the fire?
They are. They're the third. Yep. They're the third. And there's some pretty, pretty creative drivers out there that can try to get in the first or second, you know, and it does happen. Sometimes a RAT truck will show up. Either somebody gets delayed or they're close, you know, in dispatch and they show up and they're ready to go to work. And sometimes they get put to work, but the other guy, you know, is assigned to RAT, but it's an acknowledged position on dispatch. So safety engine and RAT company both have to acknowledge that, yes, I am the RAT or the safety engine on the way. So there's no confusion when you get there. There's no finger pointing. I thought you were it. No, they have to acknowledge it.
One thing, it talks about benchmarks, and is that making sure that those are announced on the radio, or that we try to accomplish certain benchmarks, or did you add stuff?
So benchmarks for us are, you know, it's your mark on scene. The first benchmark is actually a construction, right? It should be announced as this lightweight or ordinary construction. What type of construction are we dealing with here? They'll acknowledge, working fire, primary search is a benchmark. Water on the fire is the next benchmark we want to hear. Secondary search completed is a benchmark. Fire under control, you know. SCBA all clear. Guys should be wearing SCBAs until the benchmark, until a safety officer goes in and clears it of CO or hydrogen cyanide, you know, levels that we can work in. They should remain on that. But some of those benchmarks are for, they're all announced, but some of them actually are announced also by the DC to dispatch. Dispatch monitors our fire ground. They have a worksheet up there also. And we have a dedicated dispatcher on every working fire. So that actually had been put in place shortly before this fire came in. The dispatch, if you read through the report, the dispatcher was a senior dispatcher. He did a fantastic job on this. And one of the best probably producer of this event. But there were some good things that happened here in light of the fact that there were some bad things that happened, obviously, but our dispatchers worked very well on this. Looking through else through here, incident command. Yeah, we struggle with that. We are right now actually having our company officers establish command verbally on scene, which we historically for the city of Cincinnati, we don't do that. It's assumed. The first arriving district chief will assume command, but we're working towards having that first arriving company officer assume command and dictate what, you know, obviously what the strategy is and what they need, right? It's pretty simple. It's offensive or defensive fire. And hey, what do you need? I can inch a three quarter, or I need help is in the second engine, you know, helping to assist putting that line in place. That was a big one, the hose deployment. Yeah, we spoke at length about that. Having two companies work together to get that first hose line in placement is just so critical. If a company is struggling, hey man, get that second engine on that first line. If it takes four people, it takes four people. If it takes five, it takes, but get that first line in place quickly. Then you get that backup line in. But even inch and three quarter, I mean, they're tough. Something you get a long lays and a lot of bends. It takes a lot of hands on that. And the quicker you get that thing in place, obviously, the better things are going to be for you.
I came from a pretty aggressive place too. And every engine company thought the mission of the fire department was for them to put water on the fire. Right. Yeah. And so they would do that. Whereas opposed to the mission of the fire department is to put water on the fire. So we should work together. Right. And it's better to do one line than it is two lines together. Right. I mean, you're fighting it.
I have made fires where we've
most of the,
yeah, I've made fires as a junior firefighter. Yeah, I'm sorry. I made firefighters as a junior firefighter where I've got a line, the other guy's got a line, and we're squeezing through the door at the same time. And I'll be damned, somebody's going to beat me, right? You know, that's first water on the fire. And that backup position down the hallway, humping hose, that's not the recruiting poster stuff that we all want to do. But you got to do it. It's again, a tactical discipline. Somebody's got to do it. And it's a team sport, man. We got to get water on the fire quickly. And if you're the backup, be the backup today.
Yeah. So many times I see coordinated vent in these line of duty desks, right? Because most of the line of duty desks that we've looked at, I mean, there's been some recents, but typically the reports are later and coming. And so we did this before we knew a lot of the things that we know, or we knew them, but we maybe didn't put them together as this is what caused that, right? So, coordinated vent is so important. And really, I think we're almost getting to a point where we're like anti-vent, right? And that hose line, you know, make a push, get the people on it. And then once we get water in the fire, then it's vent. Then it's all kinds of.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And it comes to that communication piece. It's, you know, you can tell it's a thing of beauty when you get senior companies and these seasoned firefighters making a push on a fire, trucks getting ready to vent, whether that's horizontally or vertically, and they're talking back and forth each other, and it happens at the same time. It's a thing of beauty, right? But if it's not done at the same time, it can get pretty ugly. We know, and I tell the guys,
go ahead.
What's that? Yeah, and fire is bound by a law of physics, right? So once you learn these buildings and you learn fire behavior, and you're never going to know it all, right? We still learn something every day, every time we go to work. But you can get to a point where you're looking at a building where that fire is, and you should be able to predict without, you know, a lot of exceptions where it's going, right? And how to control that.
With the ventilation part, right? And so many times, the coordinated ventilation part is great, right? Like you said, when it works, right? But what happens then is, well, the last fire we went to, we broke the window. Well, this fire might be a little different because the engine company is delayed. So maybe we can't do it yet, right? So it's those little things that we have to pay attention to the whole scene to make it coordinated and not be dangerous. So,
yeah.
So good. I'd like to wrap this up with a couple of things, maybe two. I like to ask the people that come on to provide us with two or three things that they would want people to take home from this incident, from your experience with this, your experience as the operations chief of a pretty big fire department, and you know how this would impact what you would want them to know from this incident.
Yeah, from this incident. First of all, you know, we missed Daryl, right? Daryl was a line of duty death that we're very open with spreading this information because we don't want this to happen to other people. I would love to control that as much as possible. But these inward and outward swinging doors, that's a pretty easy thing you can look at and discuss on every run, right? You make a run, point them out as a company officer or a roughneck, right? Or a senior firefighter, whatever, whoever. Be like, hey, what's behind this door? And get curious about that and see what's behind them, right? So when you're in a low visibility situation, a high stress environment, you know, what you need is something to hit your brain and say, this isn't normal. This isn't right. Right. That first indication of something not normal should basically prompt your next actions, whether that's inward. Hey, this is not an apartment. What is this? In this case, it was an open shaft and it killed him. Hose deployment. Hey, man, you got to work on hose deployment. And these are the basics, right? And I learned this from some different units that I worked with in the Army. Become masters of the basics. And once you're masters of the basics, the other stuff will fall into place, right? And even the pros, and some of these guys are extreme pros, practice the basics over and over and over, you know? And guys will drill, they'll train. Sometimes you got to pry them off the couch. Not every person's 100% going at it. But once you get off the couch, I think most departments you would find, they get into it because guys want to go to work, right? They're there for a reason. They want to go to work. So hose deployment, complacency, obviously we look at that, but it's so insidious because you just get sucked into it. You don't know it's happening. And you'll find yourself on that 10th, 12th, 15th run of the day or the return run to a building that you've been to 100 times. And that could be it. But they pay us a lot of money. They pay us well and give us good equipment and a lot of training to be prepared. So the time to be prepared is before it happens. You're not going to be prepared if you roll up on it and the kid's trapped or whoever. You're not going to rise to a level of excellence. You're going to fall to your level of training. So all these cliche stuff, but it's so true. It really happens. But that's what I would leave with people. Drill every day. And, March is a tough time for a Cincinnati area. We've lost a lot of firefighters here in the month of March. So we have safety stand downs, and we'll talk through these line of duty death reports, whether it's Cincinnati or surrounding departments. We've got 5 line of duty deaths here that we look at pretty critically. It all happened in the month of March, over my career. It can get you out there, but train, drill.
Drill, baby, drill. That's a slogan that we live by here on Mayday Mondays. Hey, look, Chief, I really appreciate you coming on and talking about this, kind of taking us into, a tough part, a tough incident for the Cincinnati Fire Department, and losing, a really good guy, really big member of your department, and talking about it. I know it's been a while since this happened, but we want to make sure that the distance doesn't grow and we forget these things. And I know there's a lot of people in the fire service who haven't talked about this, haven't learned from it. And even if they come from a place that doesn't have an elevator, there's a lot they can take from this incident, right? Hose deployment, uncoordinated ventilation. And like the chief said, these are basics. These are basics. And be brilliant at the basics, and then everything else will fall in line. So speaking of that, Mark, will you bring the slides back up? He fed right into this month's Mayday Monday, right? And you would think I talked to him before I did it. Well, I did, but this is it, right? And go out there, work on situational awareness. So this is Irish month, right? We like to honor our Irish heritage. And what's big about Irish? Well, you get that Irish luck, right? Well, don't leave your situational awareness up to good luck. Go out there and learn what's behind these doors, right? Whether it's an elevator, again, that's going to swing, it's going to open. Whether it's a sliding elevator door, that's different. Whether it's a pull on one that comes out, that's different. Same thing. And if you go to a house, a single family dwelling, you'll find the same thing. There are doors there that you're going to find that open up differently. Closets open out, right? Bedrooms open in. So go out there and find out what's back there, and don't leave it up to chance to guess what's behind it. And here is kind of that thing, right? Look at that hallway in that apartment building. There's a lot of doors there. And, when you come upon one, don't just go, door to door to door. Well, this one went this way. This one went this way. This one's going to go that way. And it goes different. And there's something different behind it. So get out there, play the game of what's behind that door, and then if you want to ramp it up, put something over their mask so that they, when they come out, they do it, they pick doors. And again, don't leave it up to luck of the Irish to survive these things. So again, Chief, thank you. I really appreciate it. I'll have to give a shout out to Craig Coburn and Scotty Shaw there that helped me help make the connection. Cincinnati does, I know Mayday Mondays has got some friends in Cincinnati. So thank you very much.
For sure. Yeah. Very much. I really appreciate you having me on. Those guys are going to owe me a beer for putting me out here. But no, I appreciate it. And again, thanks for bringing up, you know, remembering Daryl for us and getting that back on the forefront. We appreciate it. So hopefully somebody learns from it and be happy to help. You know, anytime if anybody has questions, they can feel free to, you know, search me out. I'm pretty easy to find on Google, you know, in the fire department search. So thanks again.
Guys, you hear that? The operations chief from Cincinnati. What are you guys, like local number one?
48.
Oh, what's local one? Maybe another.
I'm not sure.
But I thought you Cincinnati was local one, but you guys have been around.
We had a lower number back in the years, but then there were some issues way, you know, hundreds of years, you know, 100 years ago that they rejoined the IFF. So we got a lower number, but yeah, local 48.
So the operations chief from Cincinnati Fire Department said, look him up if you have questions. And he'll give you whatever he can. So he gave us a really good stuff tonight. I really appreciate it. So thank you, Mayday Monday, guys. I hope to have another episode for you in April, right? And April we'll do another Mayday Monday, I hope. So we'll see you then. Thank you.